I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time again for Three Stories You Should Know. My guests this week are Shira Springer of the Boston Globe and Craig Calcaterra of NBCSports.com. Welcome back to both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
Shira, we're going to start with you this week. What do you got for us?
Well, I've got Adam LaRoche, a designated hitter for the Chicago White Sox. White Sox executive VP Kenny Williams wanted him to, quote-unquote, dial back the amount of time his 14-year-old son, Drake, spent in the White Sox clubhouse. In response, LaRoche announced his retirement on Twitter with the hashtag FamilyFirst. Now, that drew a lot of support from players around the league, and it even reportedly prompted the White Sox to consider boycotting a spring training game. Now, while baseball is a game, it's also a job. The field, the clubhouse, they're workplaces, and you have to respect that. Limiting the clubhouse access of a player's son seems entirely reasonable to me. And in this situation, it seems like the players are the ones who need to grow up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention. I was chasing my children around the studio. The sense in Chicago is that Drake LaRoche was more than just an occasional visitor. He had his own jersey. He had his own locker. There was an interview with the Chicago Tribune last year in which he was referred to as the 26th man. And there have been some various reports that maybe some White Sox players were anonymously complaining about it. And in the interest of clubhouse cohesion, Ken Williams is being the bad guy here. That seems to be breaking down. As late as Friday afternoon, there were reports of a lot of yelling back and forth between Williams and other White Sox players. So this is a little bit different than your usual family in the clubhouse situation.
It doesn't seem unreasonable to restrict some of that access, particularly because you could see sort of the outgrowth of this being you have, let's say, 20 players who want to bring 20 kids or more to the into the clubhouse. It creates a lot of tension there if you don't have a blanket policy for the team.
Shira, it's interesting. This is the first time I've heard the thoroughly discredited domino theory applied to a major league clubhouse. If we let one in, you know, we'll have to let them all in. If one country falls, they'll all fall. My concern here is that some people aren't respecting LaRoche's right to make the decision that he made. I think he has invited people, albeit not perhaps intentionally, to think about what's most important in their lives. And I find that a very interesting invitation.
Well, I think you can respect LaRoche's decision and say it's great for a player to value the family, his family, the way he does. But on the other hand, you're looking at a man who seemed unwilling to compromise.
Craig, you're up next, and your story, I gather, is also related to baseball, not a surprise, because that's what you most often cover.
Yes. I just got back from Arizona. It's a wonderful place to be in March, especially if you live in Ohio like I do. The last seven springs, actually, I have either been to Arizona or Florida to cover spring training, and I am here to inform everyone that spring training is dead. Well, not really dead. It is just not what you think it is if you haven't gone to spring training any time in the last 10 or 15 years. And I do have a lot of readers who, when I go, talk about, oh, I would love to go down to Arizona or Florida. I want the laid-back atmosphere. I want to be up close and personal with the players. I want lower-cost baseball. It's cheaper to go to these lazy games in Arizona and Florida. And I'm here to tell you that doesn't exist. The way you idealize spring training, if you haven't been there in the last few years, is pretty much over and was probably over even in the 1990s. These parks that they play in now, the Chicago Cubs, for example, their new facility holds 13,000 people. The cost is extraordinary. The Atlanta Braves, who are no great shakes this year, let me tell you, are charging $62 for spring training games. That's for one ticket. It is way more like a regular season major league experience than anything you're probably imagining, for better and for worse.
Well, I think you could say that across the board. I think there are a lot fewer opportunities for intimate moments and casual moments in professional sports. And this is what we're going to be seeing. You know, if you can suck revenue out of something and you can charge $62 for a ticket, then you do, and you have corporate sponsors, and you make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. The only places where you're going to be able to get that sort of small town cozy feel at your sporting events are going to be in minor league ballparks.
Craig, I'm glad you mentioned that this is a process that's been going on for some time, because I remember back, several decades ago, when the Texas Rangers built a new spring training facility and the dimensions of the spring training ballpark were exactly the same as the ball field in Texas. It didn't seat as many people, but they were trying to create the major league experience for their players. And I think now it's gotten to the point where the major league experience, or at least the cost of the major league experience, is the same.
you say cost, and the major league teams say revenue, revenue,
right,
revenue,
exactly.
Revenue.
And not just the teams. It's the Florida and Arizona local governments and tourism boards. They have put a lot of money into these places. There are rules that Major League Baseball has put on. You have to have a certain number of regular major league players even on the road games, because there are these commercial obligations and imperatives that the teams have to make it this way rather than the way it used to be, where a team just decamps to the middle of nowhere for a month and a half until the season starts.
Yeah, and besides that, get off my lawn. My story this week involves discussions between the NFL and the Players Association, the purpose of which is to diminish Commissioner Roger Goodell's authority. Specifically, Goodell might soon either give up or be forced to give up his power to be the guy who both disciplines players and then hears their appeals when they object through the discipline that he has meted out to them. And this would be a good thing. No system in which the convicted fellow's appeal goes to the same guy who charged, convicted, and sentenced him makes any sense at all. But I think the even more significant development here could be a stronger Players Association, because historically, unlike Major League Baseball's Players Association, the NFL union has been weak. It's never adequately addressed the medical problems of former players. And I hope the association's involvement in these current discussions will give it the opportunity to grow into being a more responsible, more effective, stronger union. Shira, what do you think? Any possibility of that?
I hope so, and I think it's about time that Goodell's authority was diminished in some capacity. Of any sport, I think the NFL needs a stronger players' association, because just of the violence in that sport, the medical consequences, as we know, from concussions and their compensation long-term, because there's not, as you know, a lot of job security in the NFL either. So it would be great if the NFL's players' association stepped up.
Oh, yeah, I agree completely. Football players are chewed up and spit out at an amazingly and alarmingly fast rate. Institutions that specifically deal with player issues other than Roger Goodell's caprice is very important. Major League Baseball, just to use my area of expertise as an example, was pretty smart a few years ago. They put Joe Torre in charge of player discipline and on-field matters, and that freed up Bud Selig and later Rob Manfred to deal with other larger issues. And in some instances, they play good cop and bad cop. And while that might be a little bit silly, and while you know that Rob Manfred could do whatever he wants to if he wanted to, having that separation, it helps the process. It normalizes things. It allows somebody who's a little more under the radar, like Joe Torre is, to relate to the people that he has to discipline rather than this sort of regal thing that Roger Goodell does and frankly just looks like tyranny.
My guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been Craig Calcaterra of NBCSports.com and Shira Springer of the Boston Globe. Thanks again to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.